It's been a couple weeks since I've been up here. It's good to be back. Well, thank you. We're going to continue in 2 Samuel today. Before we get started, you know, I'd like to share some pictures or things with you to get us thinking about different things. Just a disclaimer this morning. I'm going to share a couple pictures that might be a little disturbing to some of you, but I promise I have a point in doing this, okay? So I want you, my whole point in showing you some of these a little bit more disturbing images is I want you to feel something, okay? So I think it'll be okay. We'll see. I think it'll be fine. You guys like dogs? And we all like rescue stories, right? This is pictures of rescue dogs, okay? So here we have our first dog. As I said, it's not too disturbing, but just disclaimer. These are sad. This dog is named Gage. He was found abused and mistreated. And I think if you look at the picture, you can see the fear and pain in his eyes. But this story has a happy ending. When Gage was rescued, given some time, some love and attention, some care. Look at the difference, right? But it takes love and mercy and patience to get that transformation, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, next one. This is George. George was, when he was found, he couldn't even stand up on his own. And again, you can see the fear and pain in his eyes. But when George was rescued, after many weeks of love and mercy and treatment, we have a very healthy-looking George. Okay. Yeah, I know. Last one. This is Augustus. He was neglected. This dog was full of scabs and mange. And again, I think you can really see the fear and pain in his eyes. And then when Augustus was rescued, after many weeks of love and mercy and treatment, you see how happy he is. And I think with this final one here, you can really see that this dog knows that he's loved, right? So again, I apologize if some of those images were really sad or disturbing to you, but my whole point is, even with animals, when they are rescued from their despair and given love and shown mercy and given patience, look at the transformation that can happen, okay? We're going to look at another story today that is similar to this. But before we get there, I just want to recap where we've been. So 2 weeks ago when I was last here in 2 Samuel, we looked at chapter 7. This is where the Lord made a covenant with David and with his house. So with his family and the generations that would come after him, the covenant would be ultimately fulfilled in David's true offspring, Jesus. But again, this is just another big promise that God made to his people through David. And he said this, when your days are fulfilled and you lie down with your fathers, so David, when you die, I will raise up your offspring after you who shall come from your body, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. And again, we talked about how this isn't just this physical temple or this physical throne or David's immediate son. This is the true offspring, Jesus, the one that God's people have been waiting for thousands of years, the one that's going to build a temple and a throne and a kingdom through his people. So not just a physical place, but a spiritual temple made up of his people. So this is just another big promise that we're reading in scripture that's going to continue driving the grand story as we keep going forward. If you remember a couple weeks before this, we read how David defeated the city of Jerusalem and made it this kind of hub where he would live and reign as king, but also it would be the spiritual center where the ark and God would be. So just kind of a little recap as to setting the stage for today. So if you turn to 2 Samuel chapter 8, we're going to read through most of this chapter. But just again, remember, David is now conquering the land, finishing what Joshua had started many, many years ago. Remember, the Israelites were unfaithful in chasing all or defeating all the people around them like God had commanded them, and they have been oppressed by different peoples. So chapter 8, verse 1. After this, David defeated the Philistines and subdued them. And David took Methegama out of the hand of the Philistines. So let's just stop there a second. Methegama means mother city. So this is referring to the city of Gath, the capital city of the Philistines. So if David can take the mother city, it'd be a lot easier to take over all the other ones, right? Imagine someone wanting to take over the state of Minnesota. Maybe the Canadians are invading or something, I don't know. But it would be easier for them to take over the state of Minnesota if they took over St. Paul and Minneapolis first, right? So that's kind of what we're reading here. David took over the mother city of Gath, the Philistines, and now he's able to take control over all the others. And he defeated, this is verse 2, he defeated Moab. This is another people group near Israel that oppressed them. And he measured them with a line, making them lie down on the ground. Two lines he measured to be put to death, and one full line to be spared. And the Moabites became servants to David and brought tribute. Again, another big people group is now conquered by David and also paying him tribute. The Lord is really working through David to conquer the land that the Lord had promised to the Israelites long ago. Verse 3, David also defeated Hadadezer, the son of Rehob, king of Zobah, and he went to restore his power at the river Euphrates. And David took from him 1,700 horsemen and 20,000 foot soldiers. And David hamstrung all the chariot horses, but left enough for 100 chariots. And when the Syrians of Damascus came to help Hadadezer, king of Zobah, David struck down 22,000 men of the Syrians. Then David put garrisons in Aram of Damascus, and the Syrians became servants to David and brought tribute. And the Lord gave victory to David wherever he went. And David took the shields of gold that were carried by the servants of Hadadezer and brought them to Jerusalem. And from Beta and from Berothai, cities of Hadadezer, King David took very much bronze. Let's just pause here 1 second. I want to go back to verse 3. Now, if we're reading through this fairly fast, I don't think any of us would probably stop on verse 3. It says, David also defeated Hadadezer, the son of Rehob, king of Zobah, and he went to restore his power at the river Euphrates. Why am I stopping here? That's kind of weird, isn't it? But if we go back in time, all the way back to Genesis 15. You remember, I said God, over the course of Israel's history, had made promises to different people, covenants, that he was going to do these things and make them his people and bring them into a good place where they could worship him. This is part of the covenant God made with Abraham back in Genesis 15. And he says, on that day, he's got Abraham standing up and looking over the land of Canaan. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your offspring I give this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. Now we just read here, that's happening. David is now taking control all the way to the river Euphrates. And it encourages me, church, even though, what is this, over 1,000 years has passed from the time of Abraham to the time of David, the Lord is faithful in fulfilling his covenant promises. So when we think about the other covenant promises that he makes to David, to his people, even today, we're waiting for things to be fulfilled. But we can trust God, even if it takes 1,000 years or more, you are faithful in fulfilling your promises. So this is actually happening. David is conquering all this land from Egypt to the Euphrates River. But I think it's also a picture spiritually as well. The Lord is expanding his people and where they worship. Okay? So back to 2 Samuel, verse 8. Chapter 8, verse 9. When Toi, king of Hamath, heard that David had defeated the whole army of Hadadezer, Toi sent his son Joram to King David to ask about his health and to bless him because he had fought against Hadadezer and defeated him. For Hadadezer had often been at war with Toi, and Joram brought with him articles of silver, of gold, and of bronze. These also King David dedicated to the Lord, together with the silver and gold that he dedicated from all the nations he subdued, from Edom, Moab, the Ammonites, the Philistines, Amalek, and from the spoil of Hadadezer, the son of Rehob, king of Zobah. And David made a name for himself when he returned from striking down 18,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. Then he put garrisons in Edom. Throughout all Edom he put garrisons, and all the Edomites became David's servants. And the Lord gave victory to David wherever he went. Again, just pause there. Look at the second half of verse 6, and then look at the second half of verse 14. What does it say? In verse 6, and the Lord gave victory to David wherever he went. Verse 14, and the Lord gave victory to David wherever he went. The Lord is going before David and giving him victory. It's not in David's strength that he's doing this, it's the Lord doing it. The Lord is blessing him in fulfilling his covenant promises. The Lord has established David as the anointed king. The Lord has established a city, Jerusalem, from which the king would rule from, and where people would come and worship God. And now the Lord is expanding the kingdom. So will this warrior king rule with mercy? In verse 15 it says, so David reigned over all Israel, and David administered justice and equity to all his people. I'm going to skip the last few verses there because there's a lot of big names that I don't want to pronounce. But we can move on to chapter 9. Okay, well, here is the map. You can see from Jerusalem, the kingdom is expanding there. The Lord is going before David and giving him victory of all the oppressing peoples around. Okay? Before we go to chapter 9, I want to remind you guys from 1 Samuel chapter 20. If you remember this friendship that David had with Jonathan, remember they also made a covenant to one another, and they repeated this covenant several times over their time together. And this is what they said. Jonathan says this to David, if I am still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord, that I may not die, and do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever, when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. And we're seeing that in 2 Samuel now, aren't we? The Lord's cutting them all off. And Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, may the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies. And Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. Jonathan's telling David, when that day comes, when all your enemies are being defeated, and I think Jonathan knows Saul's family is an enemy of David, right? Even when they're getting cut off, don't forget me and my family. Please don't cut us off. Make a covenant with me that you will be with me and my family and bless us. So let's turn to chapter 9 and read through that. And David said, is there still anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? David's remembering that covenant. Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba, and they called him to David. And the king said to him, are you Ziba? And he said, I am your servant. And the king said, is there not still someone of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God to him? Ziba said to the king, there is still a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet. Let's just pause there. Before we keep going, I want to tell you, not all of Samuel is written in chronological order. If we actually looked at chapter 21 in 2 Samuel, you would see that there was a group of people called the Gibeonites, and they wanted vengeance on Saul's family, and they started wiping all of Saul's family out. And David allowed them to do it. But there was one person that was hidden, and that is the son of Jonathan. And it says he's crippled in his feet. So we're already getting a picture of him. He's weak. He's helpless. He needs people to hide him, to save his life. And this is how we're getting introduced to him. Verse 4, the king said to him, "Where is he?" And Ziba said to the king, "He is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, at Lodabar." Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, at Lodabar. And Mephibosheth, please everyone join me in saying that word. Mephibosheth, thank you. The son of Jonathan, son of Saul, so this is Jonathan's son, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. And David said, "Mephibosheth." And he answered, "Behold, I am your servant." Now, can you just imagine how scared he is? Every one of his family members has been slaughtered by the Gibeonites, probably under the blessing of the king. We're getting rid of all the enemies, right? And this guy has been hidden for years outside of Israel, and he is now being summoned by the king. And he's a cripple. He's an outcast. And he's got one way of approaching the king, and that is face down and saying, "Behold, I am your servant." How is David going to respond? David said to him, "Do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. And I will restore to you all the land of Saul, your father, and you shall eat at my table always." Again, just pause. You got to imagine, put yourself in Mephibosheth's place and wonder, is this a trick? What is he doing? Not only is he calling me, now he's going to restore all of my family's possessions and land to me, and I'm going to eat at the king's table, the highest honor. Verse 8, and he paid homage and said, "What is your servant that you should show regard for a dead dog such as I?" Now we know, because everyone's made in God's image, that Mephibosheth is very precious to God, right? But in his culture, in his society, he would have been viewed just like a dead dog. Just like those pictures that I showed you at the beginning. That's how people would have viewed him. Let's not go near him. Let's just let him be. Let's just let him die off. And now the king is calling him into his court and blessing him, restoring things to him, saying, "You can eat at my table." What's going on? Verse 9. Then the king called Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, "All that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson. And you and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him and bring in the produce that your master's grandson may have bread to eat." So you got to think, for years now, Mephibosheth is probably just kind of under the care of Ziba. Ziba has basically gotten stuff from Saul. When Saul's people were slaughtered, Ziba kind of took it. And now it's been given to the cripple. And Ziba and his sons and his servants are all going to serve Mephibosheth. "But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall always eat at my table." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. So Mephibosheth's getting quite a bit, isn't he? Then Ziba said to the king, "According to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so will your servant do." So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. And all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate always at the king's table. Now he was lame in both his feet. Okay, again, I need you guys to think about this. This guy's life just radically changed because the king called him and redeemed him. He was living outside of the people of Israel, in hiding, in the house of a servant of his grandfather. And now he is called by the king, given all these possessions back to him. The man Ziba is now serving him along with his sons and servants. And Mephibosheth is now living in the center of the kingdom in Jerusalem and eating at the king's table. Isn't this a beautiful story of redemption? But verse 13, I think, emphasizes this, and this is where I want us to really think about this. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate always at the king's table, and this ends here. Now he was lame in both his feet. Don't forget where he came from. He was like one of those dogs that nobody wanted to be around. He was a cripple. He was lame. He had no level of honor among his people. And yet he was rescued and redeemed. I want to look at one more covenant this morning before we end. And this is the new covenant. We read this in Jeremiah and in Ezekiel. And we're going to look at Ezekiel here this morning. I know we've gone through this many times before, but this never gets old to me, church. I love this. Ezekiel 36, 24 to 28. This is God promising his people. He says, I will take you from the nations and gather you from all the countries and bring you into your own land. You people that are not living in God's good place, I'm going to gather you and bring you into the good place. I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you shall be clean from all your uncleannesses. And from all your idols, I will cleanse you. Just like those dogs that we saw, full of scabs and mange, that's like a picture of the people's spiritual state. They're lost. They have no way to help themselves. They have no way of getting back to God's good place. They have no way of worshiping by themselves properly. They're stuck in the muck of idolatry. And God's going to take them and clean them and cleanse them from idolatry. And he says this, and I will give you a new heart and a new spirit I will put within you. And I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. That picture of a heart of stone, it doesn't beat for anything. It's dead. And yet God's going to take that heart out and replace it with one that beats for him. A heart of flesh, one that's soft and ready to receive something. What's it going to receive? And I will put my spirit within you. Not just a spirit, my spirit, God says. His Holy Spirit, and cause you to walk in my statutes and be careful to obey my rules. You shall dwell in the land that I gave to your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I will be your God. Isn't this beautiful? God's going to do this. He's not waiting for us to do it. We've tried and we can't. He's given us the law. He's given us the Ten Commandments. And none of us here can live up to that. We can't do it on our own. But God says, I'll do it. I'll take you. I'll rescue you. I'll clean you off. I'll give you a new heart. I'll put you in a good place so that you can walk in my statutes and be careful to obey my rules. So you can live the way that I designed you to live. I will do that for you. And that's the gospel. And we saw it in the story of Mephibosheth. And when we think about ourselves, we can see it in ourselves. Stop and think. Before the Lord rescued you, what was your life like? Were you spiritually hungry? Were you wondering, what's my purpose? I feel like I'm trying different things. I'm seeking different things. I'm not getting it. I'm hungry for something. And then the Lord, each one of our stories is different, right? But the Lord orchestrated a rescue, and he redeemed us, and he blessed us. And when Jesus went in our place on the cross, the death that we would deserve because of our sin, he not only saves us, but he brings us in as his adopted family to his table, to live with him and dwell with him and eat with him and be blessed by him forever. Isn't that beautiful, church? And I need us to think about that. We should remind ourselves of that every day. The gospel should never get old. The gospel should never get old. It's not just a story we tell kids, have them pray a prayer, and that's it. The gospel is something we should remind ourselves of every day. Because you know what? Left to myself, I would go back to the muck. I would be filled with scabs and mange and be lost. And yet the Lord brought me into his place. And he blesses me and he keeps me. And he gives me that joy that you saw on the second picture of all those dogs, right? Say, wow, I am loved. I've been shown mercy. I've been adopted. Someone loves me. And I know where I came from. And that gives me reason to worship and praise the Lord every day. And those idols don't look so appealing anymore. Because I know where I came from. And I know where I've been brought. So I want us to think about this, church. Today, we're going to take communion. And I want us to think, how am I like Mephibosheth? What's your story? And maybe, I wasn't thinking about this, but maybe over the next couple of weeks, I can challenge you, share your story with someone else here. Not just the story of God rescuing you 40 years ago. How has God been rescuing you even this month? Those ways where we find ourselves slipping back to idolatry or slipping back to passivity or whatever it may be and say, no, the Lord intervened. He's keeping me. He's speaking to me. Let's challenge ourselves to share our testimony with one another. Encourage one another in the faith. Focus on the gospel today. So I'm going to invite Michael and Jenny to start passing out the elements. And I want us to just take a moment or two to really think about our story. How are we like Mephibosheth?